Welcome back to Good Food. When Rose Levy Barenbaum came out with the first edition of the Cake Bible in 1988, it became, at nearly 600 pages, well, a Bible for home bakers. It's the sort of cookbook you refer to again and again as a trusted reference on technique, but it's also an encyclopedia of recipes. Now, Rose is back with another epic book, and just in time for the holidays. It's, you guessed it, the Cookie Bible. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Evan. It's great to be back after all this time.
I know. It's
but wonderful. Not since the Cake Bible, of course. It was just since the last book.
Yeah. But the Cake Bible is coming up on an important anniversary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's now 34 years old. Well, at any rate, it's about to be 35.
That's amazing.
So
that's just amazing. But let's talk about those little cakes called cookies.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so curious, when you started talking to people about this book and about cookies in general, are chocolate chip cookies always the starting place? Is that the first cookie people want to talk about?
I love that you ask that, because I thought, why do a chocolate chip cookie? Everybody has one. It's already out there. And somebody said to me, I forget who, we would want your chocolate chip cookies, how you feel about it. And I thought, yeah, they're right, because it's never actually been my favorite cookie. I found it too sweet and even too salty in some parts. And how can I make it the best it possibly can be? And that's when I decided that I would try using brown butter, and not just clarifying the butter till it's brown, but including the milk solids for extra flavor, and then adding some corn syrup to give it more of a sticky quality and a chewy quality. So I went from there to coming up with a chocolate chip cookie that really was mine.
That's one of the main reasons why all of us love your recipes so much. The way you write, you always put it in a flavor context and texture context by explaining what your ideal is, because your ideal may not be everybody's ideal. And then you link the techniques to create that idea in the headnote, which allows us to understand what we're going to do in the recipe, which I find to be incredibly valuable.
Can you see me smiling? when you started off, I started smiling and I haven't stopped since the end of the paragraph, I should say. Yeah, the head notes are my favorite part. I love telling people what to expect and also how they can make the recipe their own if they want to change it.
Because people are afraid to make changes, and they've been told many times that baking is, as opposed to much savory cooking, you have less leeway to make changes.
That's true. And one of my least favorite words, well, there are two words. When they start off with, can you, I always know the third word is going to be substitute. You know, everybody seems to want to substitute and make something to make it their own, to put their stamp on it. So I thought, let me tell you right off the bat what you can do to make it your own, in my opinion. I mean, they may be wanting to add other things, because one person once, when I was doing Macy's de Gustavus, she raised her hand, she said, can you substitute something for the banana in the banana cake? And I said, well, why make the banana cake then? Make a cake that doesn't have bananas. But my editor's husband, who was so wonderfully sarcastic, said, he yelled from the audience, yes, watermelon. You know, he was trying to show the absurdity of it. I don't know what this is about substitute, but I think I got a sort of inkling idea when I mentioned that it's to make it your own. It's to have it be not Rose's anymore, but Aunt Sally's or Grandma's or whatever, or Evan's.
But you have to start, in my opinion, and I should say that I'm constitutionally incapable of following a recipe, including my own, but I try really hard to always make a recipe the first time the way it's written, and then I understand how I can make a change.
Yeah, me too. And in fact, I sometimes break my own rules, and then I think, yeah, but I wrote them, I can bake them. Once I found myself saying, it says, and then I realized, I'm the it. You know, I don't have to follow it 100%. Isn't that a hoot?
So funny.
Yeah.
The way cookies are named is so different than any other kind of food. There's something playful yet descriptive and sometimes very traditional about them, and we hold on to the traditions. So I'm going to ask you about a few. The pepper cockers.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked for that one. Well, it has lots of spices in it, which makes it so special, and even cayenne pepper. But that's a recipe from my husband, Woody. And he does Tai Chi. And in the Twin Cities, his Sifu's mother had this recipe. I think she's Swedish, and it's a Swedish cookie. And I used to think that the word kakor, a cookie, was kind of a Yiddish word, which isn't a very favorable term, but in Dutch and in Swedish, it means cookie. And they have also clove and cinnamon. And his daughter found some in her desk drawer that he made for her 3 years ago, and they still were crunchy. Of course, it wasn't human, but the idea that I
would have cookies in a drawer for 3 years without eating them within the first, minute.
No, they got buried. But, also ginger is a preservative, as you know, and ginger is in the pepper cockers. And people are so addicted to them, and they ride the cusp of sweet and savory. They're great with cheese, and they're great with just by themselves.
So let's talk about shortbread for a minute. Can you use it as an example of taking a basic and very widely known cookie and making it your own?
Actually, I've tried every single possible flour and flour mixture, including rice flour to make it crisper, and different types of sugar. And I always go back to my basic standard one. But recently, I think in this book, it's included, is using brown sugar because it gives it a wonderful flavor.
That's the Muscovado shortbread cookies.
Yeah. And I always mention Muscovado because it really has so much more flavor, but brown sugar is still wonderful.
I make my own brown sugar.
By adding molasses, you mean?
Yeah, just because I hate running out. I mean, when I run out, and I used to panic if I ran out of brown sugar, then I was like, oh, I don't need to panic.
No, what I hate is how it clumps. I mean, not when you make your own, but when you buy it. If you don't keep something soft and moist in the jar or the container, and if you don't think of it ahead, it takes at least 8 hours to soften the brown sugar.
When you make your own, it never clumps.
Exactly.
Tell us about the caramel surprise snickerdoodles.
Oh, yeah, those are one of my favorites. And one of my favorite photographs, and maybe the top one in the book. But originally, I tasted these cookies at Gramercy Tavern. Miro Uskokovic is the pastry chef and a really good friend. And when I bit into the cookie, this caramel oozed out. I mean, it didn't flow out, but it came out in a wonderful texture. So I begged him for the recipe, and he gave me a recipe for 400, and I worked it down. And then when I said, do you mind? But it's in grams, so it's not a problem. Anyway, the thing is that I made it, and partway through the baking, it opened up, and the caramel started coming out prematurely. So I finally got it to work, but it was so difficult. I asked him, what happens when you do it? Why doesn't that happen? And he said, many of them do. I just have them. He has a whole bunch of people working for him. So he said, I just have them make more because it's such a nice thing to have that surprise. So I decided, down with the surprise. Let's let people see what's in there and make the caramel and apply it afterwards. It's the texture of the caramel is so perfect. I can roll it out when it's set and stamp it out. But I didn't give that technique because I don't think most people would want to do that. And it's easy enough when it's still slightly warm to just spread it on.
The cookie that I have to say I was most happy to see in the book was the thumbprints, which you also give an alternative presentation as a Linzer bar. And this is like one of the major sort of Madeleine kind of memories for me from childhood. And recently, when I would start to look for jam thumbprint recipes, so many of them have no ground almonds or walnuts or pecans in the dough. They just are rolling them. And yours is that kind of great sandy textured ball I'm looking for.
Yeah, and kids can do this, and they love doing them so much. That's one of the great things about cookies is that it's a great family participation kind of thing. In fact, a friend of mine, when I wrote the first book, The Roses Christmas Cookies, I wrote in it about how when she would go home to Ohio every Christmas, her mother would save some of the dough to shape with her because she said, when your hands are busy, you find you can say things you might not feel comfortable saying if they weren't. Isn't that a beautiful tradition?
Oh, I absolutely think it's true. Are you one of those bakers who enjoys sending care packages? Do you ever send cookies in the mail?
I used to. When relatives had moved far away, such as my brother who's in San Francisco area. And one of the things I think the traditions that I've written about is that the nicest gift is to give cookies with a recipe with a cookie cutter if it's used for that cookie, or a cookie in a cookie tin that's decorative. I think that's one of the most personal and desirable gifts that you can give.
Thank you so much, Rose. As always, we could just go on talking forever. I so appreciate this book.
Well, I look forward to writing another book so we can get back together again.
Me too. Yeah. That was Rose Levy Barenbaum, the James Beard and IACP award-winning author of 12 cookbooks. Her latest is The Cookie Bible, an epic 448-page work that covers everything from lemon lumpies and coconut snowball kisses to black tahini crisps and pineapple biscotti, and, of course, chocolate chip cookies. We have two recipes from Rose for you on our website. Find both her peppercocker and the caramel surprise snickerdoodle recipes at kcrw.com/goodfood.